This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A heart attack kills the ex-president of Argentina. The state of Arizona kills a convicted murderer, and Willamette National Forest kills a mushroom picker.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, October 27th, 2010. Former Argentine President Néstor Kirchner died unexpectedly in the Patagonian city of Calafate today after suffering a heart attack, according to local media reports. He was 60. Kirchner was the husband and closest advisor of current President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, as well as a congressman for the Buenos Aires province. During his presidency, which spanned 2003 to 2007, Kirchner helped the country recover from one of the worst economic crashes in Argentine history and went on to become one of the country's most influential political leaders. Despite undergoing two major operations earlier this year, he was believed to be planning a second run for the presidency in 2011. Arizona officials have convicted executed a convicted murderer after an 11th-hour Supreme Court ruling that granted them permission to use a drug that was produced overseas.
I get the feeling that an Arizona conviction and execution are really handled in the same breath. That's sort of a one-courthouse, no-waiting kind of a thing.
But all I did was steal three cans of Four Loko.
Doesn't matter. Get in the back.
You know, and then there's just, you know, it's just sort of a Henry Ford version of justice there.
Earlier this year, states across the country began running out of sodium thiopental, an anesthetic used to knock patients out before they're administered a lethal drug cocktail. The shortage has delayed executions in Kentucky, California, and Oklahoma, but this week Arizona officials came up with a solution. They went abroad and brought home a drug from an unidentified British company in order to execute convicted killer Jeffrey Landegren.
So there's just a guy wandering around Tijuana, just looking for whatever it is they kill people with?
What do you use to knock people out?
Because
we're out of stuff.
Is he just carrying one of those execution bags that hang on the IV buddy, just going, "This! I need this! Drugo! I am from Arizona!
I have American money!"
So what are the three states that we're running out?
Kentucky, California, and Oklahoma.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, I suppose. At least in the first and third stage there.
We've killed so many people, we've
Seriously.
Run out of stuff to knock them unconscious first.
I wonder if they just didn't want to go to Texas, because Texas always jukes the price there. Texas really just extorts you if you have to borrow from them.
Well, on Monday, an Arizona judge blocked Landrigan's execution on the grounds that the state's sodium thiopental came from a non-FDA-approved source and could, ironically, be unsafe.
Wah, wah.
After a day of legal squabbling, the U.S. Supreme Court lifted the restraining order at about 7 p.m. last night, and Landrigan was executed less than 4 hours later.
I wonder if they saved this case for last, is just sort of a, and on the lighter side of the docket today, you know, because if the whole argument is that it's going to be unsafe to use this on the guy, this isn't even the thing that kills him. This is just the thing that puts him to sleep.
Right. But it could
It seems like if it's
potentially, I guess it could make him sick first before they kill him.
But it seems like if it's unsafe, that's just a speedier, more efficient, more economical version of justice, right? Like if it's the thing that puts you to sleep and kills you, then you've effectively, it's like that 3-in-1 shampoo that Suave sells.
Although the problem might be, though, that it wouldn't kill him. It would just make him really sick.
Just give him explosive diarrhea.
Yeah, and then he, yes.
Do you have any last words?
Or he'd have some kind of, like, reaction like people have when they're stung with bees. And he would just swell up all over.
He gets all Violet Beauregard.
Yeah. So the move generated controversy in the United Kingdom, and on Tuesday a prominent civil rights lawyer wrote an op-ed for The Guardian demanding the naming and shaming of the unnamed company. Before Landrigan was executed, the Oklahoma native's last words were, "Boomer Sooner," a reference to the university football team. Here's a witness who describes the killer's final moments.
Can I get a witness? This is just witness one?
I believe so, yes.
Hold on a second.
No, execution one.
Execution. All right, I'm sorry. I guess I could have sussed that out. Execution one. Hold on a second. These are in alphabetical order, and so I'm going through 100 cuts that I'll say comic books. Here we go.
He didn't move during the procedure that I could see.
Especially at the end there.
His lips parted slightly once he was unconscious.
Okay. Have you ever thought about what your last words would be if you were going to be executed?
Not really, although I have spent a lot of time thinking about what my last meal would be,
yeah.
Unsurprisingly.
Well, I moved on from that early on in my life. I figured that out. I think that was the first thing that I dealt with. And then once that was accomplished, then I went on to the last words thing. For a while, I went through this whole thing where I wanted it to be, like I was going to deliberately try to be vague or mysterious. Then I was going to go the whimsical route and say, "Rosebud," right before I died, just as sort of a, you know, just because you like to think that'll give you a little immortality. I mean, the hearts of film nerds everywhere. But now I'm back to square one. I have no idea what I would say.
I know for a long time I knew that if I ever won an Academy Award, when I was winning my award, I would say, "Joe Overstreet, eat your heart out," because he's the boy I was like in love with from the 5th through the 8th grade who broke my heart. But I don't think that would be a good one for like an execution.
Maybe you could just skip to the end of the page and have Taylor Swift write a song about him.
That's fine. If only she would.
That should be her side career. Taylor Swift ought to just write hateful songs about other people. You know, for like if you had the right amount of money, like if you have 50 grand,
yeah.
She'll just knock out like a 60-second ditty about, "Hey, that guy wouldn't date me in 9th grade. F you. I hope you die." Wah, wah, wah. And then there's a guitar solo, and then
they
she
could get
kind
you
of
to
twirls
do it,
around.
Because that was awesome.
I'm telling you, it's a niche market. It's a market waiting to be saturated by me, Rick Emerson.
A mushroom picker missing for 3 days in the Willamette National Forest has been found dead just a half mile from where she parked her minivan, a Lane County Search and Rescue Crew coordinator says. Two black chow mix dogs were with Dodie Throssell when she disappeared.
Dodie Throssell.
But she disappeared on Saturday. Doesn't that sound like the name of a woman who'd go picking mushrooms, by the way?
The Castle Rock native had this to say.
The dogs helped a group of Linn County Explorer Scouts locate her body in the steep drainage area about 5 p.m. Tuesday. It wasn't immediately clear whether the 54-year-old Springfield woman died from exposure, injury, or another cause. Throssell and two friends drove Saturday to Goodman Creek Road on the south side of Highway 58 to hunt for chanterelle mushrooms. Throssell left her two friends, a man and a woman, and drove by herself a couple of miles further up the road. She parked her van by the side of the gravel road. When she failed to return, her friends hiked up the road and found her van. They searched and called for her before calling 911 after darkness fell.
Dodie Throssell. Wasn't able to get back to her job as a school marm in the small town that can only be saved by Clint Eastwood from the vengeful sheriff who runs the entire place with a corrupt fist. She also sounds, it's also a little bit like maybe a pioneer name for some sort of thistly weed that you would find, you know?
Or a dessert.
A Dodie Throssell?
A Dodie Throssell. It would be some kind of like a delicious like coffee cake.
It'd be something that Dorothy Parker would order.
Steven Slater, the flight attendant who was fed up with his job and escaped out of his flight duty by sliding down the jet's chute with a beer, has a tentative book deal titled Cabin Pressure.
I so regret that I did not prepare that Slater soundbite.
I know. Why?
Because I guess I figured I would just F it. I'd do it live. And so I did.
And that was awesome. Although it did sound like the guy yelling Skinner, the superintendent on the Simpsons.
I would be surprised if one wasn't modeled on the other, actually.
Hmm.
All right. So this is these are the Slater cuts?
Yes. He was a guest on Larry King Live and remembers the day he cracked under pressure.
If I was that guy, is it Steven Slater? Is that his name?
Yes.
I would just be tempted. Wouldn't it just be awesome if he just ended every interview by grabbing some beers and, like, sliding off the stage? So, Stephen Slater, welcome to Larry King Live. And he's like, gotta go! And he just grabs
F this! That's his catchphrase.
And just slides across the desk, you know, sort of Dukes of Hazzard into the General Lee style, and just leaves Larry King just sitting there blinking at the camera like an aged hypnotoad. Except instead of a sound, it just makes kind of a noise. Yeah. All right, here's Stephen Slater.
Okay.
It was a stressful, rushed flight full of harried travelers and, of course, a harried crew. And it started out kind of not on a great, great note.
He sounds like a really sedate Fred Schneider. You know, like a Fred Schneider looks back on his life and career.
It was a stressful, rushed flight full of harried travelers and, of course, a harried crew. And it started out kind of not on a great...
I've got a monster in my pants, and it makes me want to dance.
Harried travelers! Yeah. Slater says his behavior was a combination of stress and being overworked. He described it this way.
You're stressed. Your flight attendants are working 12, 14-hour duty days, often with as little as 6 to 8 hours rest the night before. Like I said, it was the third leg of the day. It was the third,
leg
of the three-day trip.
The flight attendants are stressed. I'm trying to do like Fred Schneider.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at it, am I?
No. You're lacking a little something there. I don't know exactly what it is.
I don't really do imitations.
You got to do sort of a, you got to put it up more in your nasal cavity, sort of an up here in your throat.
Yeah, right. Slater explained his actions in a few words.
The storm will eventually move into...
No, I'm sorry. That's totally wrong. What is this called? Slater 3?
Slater 3.
You know, that's... I'm not entirely sure where that went to. I'm just full... Oh, here we go. Slater 3.
The storm will eventually move into Canada.
That's totally wrong.
Okay.
That's a guy talking about something else altogether. Let's try Slater 4.
Okay, this is him explaining his actions, which cost him his job and his hefty court fines.
You're stressed. Your flight attendants are working...
Yeah, no, I got nothing. Nah, it's a fail. No, the soundboard is... No, it's linking to the same thing.
All right.
Well, there you go. But seriously, who needs 6 to 8 hours of sleep? What kind of an excuse is that? What kind of pampered, lazy-ass bastard gets 8 hours of sleep in this country?
And I think anybody who has ever worked in a situation where you work with the public, like anybody who works retail, anyone who has ever waited tables, anything where you are in a sort of somewhat subservient position to the public at large will tell you that the public sucks. The public are awful, awful people. And you will grow to loathe them if that's what you have to do for a living.
I would say that I passed that point as well some time ago, so maybe I'm just immune to that sort of thing. Also, I haven't had to have a lot of those jobs, you know, since I became an adult.
There's a great book called Waiting that they actually made a bad movie with Ryan Reynolds about it from it. But it's nothing but anecdotal just quotes from people who wait tables. And it's divided into different sections about the job. And one of them, my favorite was, it was about romance in the workplace. And they were asking if anybody had ever dated customers. And there was just this one quote where this person said, "I don't date customers. I would never date customers. I hate customers."
See, and I guess I've just never really felt that way because customers are no different than anybody else. I mean, you know, there's just nothing.
Customers have you ever had a retail job, though?
I have, but it's like, but saying customers is like saying people who wear shoes. Like, it's just, like, everybody's a customer of something. That just, when you say customers, that means nothing, because everybody is a customer.
Yeah, except
that means the guy behind the counter dealing with the customer as well, because he's also a customer of places. That's just crap people say, because they're supposed to say, well, this job sucks, the customers are terrible. Well, that means nothing.
Well, what it means is that when you're in a position, whether you're a flight attendant or you're working at, you know, a coffee place or you're at McDonald's or whatever, if you're in a position where you are supposed to be friendly no matter what and wait on a person, there are a large number of people who just abuse that relationship horribly.
That's true. So, but it's not customers that suck. It's that job that sucks. And it's just people in general. To say that it's customers, just that really undersells the hate that's called for there. I mean, that's a piker's kind of hate. Customers suck. I mean...
Just imagine being a flight attendant. You're dealing with those people in the worst possible situation.
No, you got to have a broader, more expansive view of this, where it's just humanity in general that is awful and almost without redeeming value in every circumstance. I mean, it's such a miniature keyhole view of the world to say, well, customers are terrible. No, it's just people, Don. It's just people. They're the problem. They are what's wrong with everything.
Okay.
And mollusks. But mostly people.
What did mollusks do?
I don't like to talk about it. Mm. Not here. Not in mixed company.
Is this like one of those things that scarred you?
They run the banking system.
It won't get much fanfare as the stimulus, but the Federal Reserve, which may be run by mollusks, is expected to unveil plans to do something with up to $100 billion of U.S. Treasury bonds.
To do something.
I ripped that corner off of my story accidentally.
Wait a minute. So you don't know what the verb is, that they're going to blank. So this is like some sort of, an Alan Greenspan password kind of a thing. The Federal Reserve is going to blank with $100 million of notes.
Yeah, if I could find that other story.
Ruth Buzzi.
Like I could put it together.
No, it's better if you don't know.
Oh, buy. They're going to buy.
Oh, see, that's why do you have to? Why do you have to go ruining the fun? It was so much more interesting we didn't know. Buy.
I had to put the story back together like a jigsaw puzzle so I could see what I was reading.
Barely even active voice.
The Federal Reserve is expected to unveil plans to buy up several $100 billion of U.S. Treasury bonds over the next few months in an effort to stabilize the economy. Federal Chief Ben Bernanke is betting that driving up prices of long-term bonds will spur growth by decreasing long-term interest rates, an argument that's offended the heads of several regional banks who worry that the Fed could be courting future inflation. Officials say they want to back off the shock and awe style employed during the crisis and, according to the Wall Street Journal report, appear to be shying away from aggressive action. Bernanke has compared the bond-buying plan to putting in golf, saying that unlike previous programs, he wants flexibility to change course if there are any dramatic shifts in the economy or inflation rate. But analysts warn that how well Bernanke does on the initial putt could have serious economic implications. If he doesn't do enough, the bank will be criticized as falling short, while doing too much could stoke fear of an overreaction. So you don't care about any of this, do
no,
you?
No, not at all. Imagine how much better that story would have been if we hadn't known it was buy and if we'd said, like, frappe.
That's true.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday. You can get this program later on via iTunes or your favorite RSS reader or as a direct download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. It's brought to you by many fine business partners, including Castalia Language Center, based in downtown Portland. Castalia Language Center, you can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. They offer Spanish language classes to adults. It means no infants, no toddlers, no babies, no kids, no teens, no nothing. Just you, the adults. And that is because adults learn at a different way and at a different rate, different time, different speed than the younger set.
So, midgets are okay, though?
I'm sorry?
Midgets? Adult midgets?
Well, as long as they're adult midgets. I don't want any baby midgets around me.
Okay.
Hey, is a baby midget the same size as a regular baby? Or, in other words, is it a proportional growth throughout their life? Or is it that they're the same size as a normal, you know, a regular baby, but then they just, the growth is slow?
I'm not sure. And I'm sure there's probably some kind of difference between babies, midgets, and dwarfs as well. I don't know.
Here's the thing. I think I've solved my own query there. Because it seems like they would have to be a proportionally smaller baby, or that's just... You're just going to have a powdered pelvis if you're the mom.
That's true.
Just going to be a cracking you can hear on the third floor of the hospital. Mm-hmm. Well, in any event, this has nothing to do with Spanish, I suppose, except they have midgets in Spain, one would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Probably walking jauntily down the street during one of their many festive parades. Not for midgets, but for Spaniards. I just kind of walked myself into a thing that I thought was going to be a solution, and it went nowhere. PortlandSpanish.com is the website for Castalia Language Center. Please tell me you heard it here at Legion of News. They will find a Spanish language program that works best with your schedule, your time frame, and with the level of Spanish speaking ability you already have. Clara Grebel is the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center, and they help bring you this fine piece of entertainment, Legion of News. Find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Election Day is next week, and in the Louisiana Senate race, the question is who will fare better at the polls, a Republican incumbent with a sex scandal or a Democrat? According to polls, incumbent Republican David Vitter, who was linked to a prostitution ring, is doing far better than his Democratic challenger Congressman Charlie Melencon. This voter says she's not too bothered by Vitter's past.
Well, his opinion might be on family values, but he just didn't follow it. But it's between him and his wife.
See, that's what I'm saying when I say that you get. It's not just customers that are dumb. It's just carbon-based life forms, specifically those that are bipedal.
He's a hypocrite, but I don't care.
Poor schmores, what do I care? Which, by the way, it's interesting that she and I are in lockstep on this. The man on the street, who is a woman in this case, she and I are, we're of a mind, of a piece. We're of the body, as they say.
Congressman Melencon says he isn't buying the poll numbers.
It's hard for me to believe, because I grew up in a house with three sisters, no brothers, that those same women are going to go to the poll and pull the lever for David Vitter.
Pull the lever.
The antithesis of what they're preaching to their children every day.
That is awesome. That's fantastic. Right before I go to the general store and get me a bag of feed. Pulling the lever. That's awesome. And I thought I was the only one who did it by saying bipedal just now. Was there ever a lever that you pulled? You always see that in the 30s, but for me it was always the punch thing.
Yeah, no, there was. There used to be a thing that would, yeah.
What did the lever do?
I think it punched the holes in the ballot, maybe.
All right. See, I'm not saying that's wrong, because I don't know. I wasn't there. But But that just seems like you're over-solving it. Like, what is the point of having the lever if the lever just punches? They had ice picks, clearly, at that point, right?
Giving people ice picks.
Well, I mean, it depends on the city you're in. It seems like in Chicago, that's probably a birthright, you know? It's like a chicken in every pot, an ice pick in every clenched hand. Well, I don't know. It just seems like if you're designing a whole system, the whole upshot of which is just to, like, jab a hole through a thing, you just give a guy a stick. Mm. There you go. Here's your stick. Here's your ballot. You're good. Bam.
Maybe the lever did nothing. It just gave people a sense of accomplishment.
Like the closed door thing in the elevator that does nothing as well. Or the crosswalk button that's disconnected.
Exactly.
All right. Fantastic. The lever. All right.
Transocean Limited, the owner of the Deepwater Horizon rig, leased by BP, has been flying under the radar in the mainstream blame game. The world's largest offshore drilling contractor, the company is conveniently headquartered in corporate-friendly Switzerland, and it's no stranger to oil disasters. In 1979, an oil well it was drilling in the very same Gulf of Mexico ignited, sending the drill platform into the sea and causing one of the largest oil spills by the time it was capped 9 months later. This experience undoubtedly influenced Transocean's decision to insure the Deepwater Horizon rig for, it turns out, about twice what it was worth. In a conference call to analysts earlier this month, Transocean reported making a $270 million profit from insurance payouts after the disaster. So.
Awesome. We're in the wrong business.
We are.
We got to find some tiny little, like an island or a country or something that hasn't been discovered, and then just set up nothing but just oil and booze and whores and guns there.
And then take out an insurance policy on it and just blow it all up.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, we're not saying that now. We're saying that theoretically, not in any way that can be deposed later on.
No, because that would be wrong of us to actually do that.
That would be a conspiracy to commit a felony across state lines. So we're not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, in some alternate world. You know, the pioneers and, the Lewis and Clarks of the world and the Columbi of the world they had it really easy because they could just go to a land that was, I mean, effectively bereft of people or became that way, and then you could just set up casinos and or oil rigs or some combination of the two.
Back in the day where you could go somewhere and say, why, look, it's undiscovered. No one has ever known that this existed, you know, except for the people who already live here. But they don't count.
Well, and they've got weak immune systems, Don. That's just Darwin doing what Darwin does.
Here, have some blankets.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you're killed by a blanket, we don't need your weak ass in the reproductive pool anyway. Mm. That's all I'm saying. If it takes a blanket to kill you, you know, nature was going to weed you out eventually anyway.
Let's do some science.
No, that is science right there.
That's
a fact.
Yes.
That's hard knowledge is what that is. Here's your science on the march for, what is today? Wednesday? Wednesday.
It is.
Right here at Legion of News.
A newly discovered species of monkey with an upturned nose that causes it to sneeze when it rains.
And to look down at the other monkeys.
Has been found in northern Burma. The animal was almost entirely black with white tufts on its ears and chin, according to the wildlife organization Fauna and Flora International. The monkeys display characteristics unlike any other snub-nosed species previously described, it said. And I will take a moment here to say that it also looks frighteningly like the Michael Jackson caricature on South Park.
Really? Is there a photo?
I uploaded it to Rick
Emerson. Is this to rickemerson.com/pictures?
Yes.
Awesome.
So you can see it.
All right.
Although the species was new to science, it was well known to locals who call it the monkey with an upturned face. On rainy days, the monkeys often sit with their heads tucked between their knees to avoid getting water in their upturned noses. The monkeys were believed to spend the summer at higher altitudes in mixed temperate forests and descend closer to villages in winter when food was scarce. Frank Momberg, FFI's Asian Pacific Regional Program Development Coordinator, said interviews with local hunters suggested there were just 260 to 330 of the species, which would make it critically endangered.
Wait, so we just discovered it and it's already endangered? We move fast.
Oh, yeah.
Humans we've really got it down to a science, to an art form.
New monkey, and you're dead.
We just found this thing, and it looks great as a belt. All right. No, I'm sorry. I just went by out of force of habit, I went to the Geeko Lantern thing. So this is visual aids for, what is today? Today's the 20th. Oh, wow.
Yeah, doesn't it? It looks like Michael Jackson with his fake nose taken off.
Okay, so, wait, when you said it had an upturned nose.
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem to have a nose at all. It just has breathing holes.
Yeah, it kind of does.
This is like one of those things that Art Bell is always seeing in the sky. It's just like got the alien gray face, you know?
It's an alien monkey.
Wow. Okay, there is no way around this. It looks exactly like South Park's depiction of Michael Jackson.
Yes.
I'm sorry, there's no getting past that fact. Wow.
There you go. So you can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures for today.
Yeah, sometimes the truth, however harsh it may sound, it's like how Julia Roberts looks like a duck. I mean, it's just like, you know, we're not supposed to say that in polite company, but we all know it's true. This looks just like Trey and Matt's Michael Jackson. Okay, I have to close this. It's freaking me out. You can find that at rickemerson.com/pictures in today's visual aids, October 27th.
NASA is getting ready to preview later this morning its next close encounter with a comet. Next week on November 4th, the Deep Impact spacecraft, which is already in flight, will fly with about 435 miles of comet Hartley 2. NASA project manager Tim Larson explains why studying comets is so important.
So understanding comets gives us a clue as to what was going on early in the formation of the solar system, gives us a clue to some of the formation dynamics of our own planets.
Larson discusses what can be learned from comets orbiting the solar system.
Understanding comets gives us a clue as to what was going on early in the formation of the solar system, gives us a clue to some of the formation
Didn't
dynamics
he just say
of
that?
Our own planets.
He really did. Yeah,
he's that's repeating himself.
That's a whole thing. That's what happened with the other cut earlier, where it's like the same, like two different buttons are going to the same thing. It's crazy.
What are you doing over there with the sound? What? Were you drunk?
Maybe it's some sort of a subconscious manifestation of my desire to hear that same soundbite again because I found it especially informative and entertaining.
I don't believe you.
Or maybe I just want to do this.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
That's fantastic. All right.
In the Netherlands, spray-on DNA mist is an increasingly popular form of theft prevention. The system uses newly created synthetic DNA and probably wouldn't work with 419 million-year-old DNA. The DNA sprayer goes above a private business's entrance, usually accompanied by an ominous sign that says something like, "You steal, you're marked." The idea is if someone is robbing a business, an employee would activate the DNA sprayer without attracting the thief's attention, much like how you would activate a silent alarm. The invisible spray permeates the air and settles onto the thief without his knowing it. The local police department is automatically alerted to the crime in progress. Visible only under ultraviolet light, the mist carries synthetic DNA markers unique to the location, allowing the police to match the thief with the place that was burgled.
So it's like a dye pack. It's like a DNA dye pack.
Yeah, it's an invisible DNA dye pack.
Wow.
The invisible spray permeates. The local police department is automatically alerted. The DNA mist is imperceptible to those who come in contact with it. The manager of one business that now uses it told the New York Times, "You don't smell it, you don't see it, nobody knows it's there."
That's fantastic.
The technology is more about keeping potential thieves at bay rather than actually capturing a burglar once a crime has been committed. At least that's what one company behind the technology says. Donald Vanderland's company distributes the DNA spray to Dutch businesses. He says the devices aren't supposed to capture crooks so much as they're supposed to scare away potential thieves. He said the whole thing is prevention, not about recovering stolen goods or capturing criminals. The company claims to have helped drastically reduce crime in areas where the technology has been deployed. But the company, however, hasn't released any figures to prove that.
Wow. I wish that I'd thought of that. That's a fantastic idea. Man, I wonder if it's the next step of that would be, is it like an aerosol, you said, or they're spraying it into the air?
Yeah, it's a mist.
How great would it be if you could just, like, if I could mist you with DNA right now, like a shh, except instead of just being a synthetic DNA that just marks you, it just gives you, like, horns the next day.
Don't mist me with your DNA.
Or you just wake up. Well, if I had a nickel done.
I don't want your DNA on me.
If you just wake up the next morning and you've just got like green scaly skin, you know, or like a nose on the palm of one of your hands.
Why would you do that to me?
Because it would be funny. I mean, not for you, but I mean...
It would be a terrible thing to do to me.
But Don, someone must always cry so that others may laugh. And unfortunately, you've drawn the shortest of straws. You've been Shirley Jacksoned. We're going to have to spray you with DNA.
So I bring the DNA mist to your attention. And then you use it to turn me into a scaly monster.
Yes. You should have known that would happen, though. You knew that that would be the outcome. You knew what I was when you picked me up to carry me across the river.
There's good and bad news in a study released today in the journal Science. The bad news is that 1/5 of all the world's vertebrate species are under threat of extinction. The good news is that without conservation efforts, that number would have been much higher. Without programs geared towards preserving biodiversity, the rates of decline in the Red List Index would have been 18% steeper, said study author Anna Rodriguez, a researcher for the Study for Evolutionary and Functional Ecology in France. But despite these efforts, the study found that 1 in 4 mammals, 1 in 8 birds, and 1 in 4 reptiles are facing extinction thanks to a combination of overexploitation, habitat loss, and invasive species. Additionally, the authors estimate that without natural ecosystem services like pest control, pollination, and clean drinking water, governments would have to pay $33 trillion annually. Economists have calculated that not stepping up our efforts on biodiversity loss will cost us 7% of the global GDP by 2050, and that doesn't even include the consequences of resource conflicts, refugees, and political instability.
I'm still back on what I could do if we were all to spray you with DNA. I realize out of context, if you just joined us, that sounds a little odd.
Could you give me a thicker, more luxuriant eyelashes so I don't have to go buy that stuff that... made Claire Danes' eyes change color?
You have to buy that, like, that Daubon eyelash grower. How much is that stuff?
I have no idea. I imagine it's very expensive since it's by prescription only. You have to go find a cosmetic surgeon or a doctor or a dermatologist, actually.
That's how you know something's expensive, is when they won't tell you the price.
Yeah.
When they actually say, you know, it's like you ever go to a webpage for some product or some whatever, and they, you know, and you're like, how much is it? And it says, email for inquiry. You know, and you're like, oh, I can't afford that.
Somebody, this is like third-hand information, but someone on the intranet said that a friend of theirs actually did that, and her eyelashes got so long, they got too long, and they were like brushing against her like eyebrow bone, and she had to trim her eyelashes.
That doesn't surprise me, actually, because I mentioned how they'll do the hair transplant now, like for burn victims and stuff. Like if you get your eyebrows or your eyelashes burned off, they'll do hair transplants. And the guy, the doctor was telling me about this, he said, yeah, the only real drag is like you got to get, he's like, if you're transplanting hair from some other part of your body, it's like if they move hair from like your head to your eyelashes, he's like, the hair doesn't know it's moved. So it's just growing like it would normally grow. It's like you got to be snip the stuff off every now and again.
See, and then there's the problem with the eyelashes is then I imagine I would need to like then get somebody to professionally trim my eyelashes.
Stepping on them.
Because like, you know what a bad job people do sometimes just on their own bangs.
Well, especially
you don't want to be trimming your eyelashes
with scissors near my eyes.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Let me just. That seems like it could go really astoundingly poorly. That's what happened there.
But my one good eye would have fabulous eyelashes.
Yes.
That's all the science.
There you go. There's your science on the march. All right. Hey, by the way, so we had an answer emailed to us. I think we had this question. It was not in Legion of News. I think it was in the Rick Emerson Show yesterday. But we were talking about that. The thing where Portland is telling you to keep your wash-up bin or whatever, and we couldn't figure out what it was, and we found
that
out that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing in the...
That was on this show yesterday, yeah.
Well, but it was... You don't even know what I'm going to ask yet, though.
The overflow bin.
But see, it's not that question. It's a question I had... Doesn't matter. Never mind. The point is, I was going to tell this whole thing, and then I was going to reveal the answer that had been emailed to us later on, and then I was going to tie it into CJ's High Climbing. That opportunity for amusement has been closed off to me now, though, so I'll just move forward by telling you that CJ's High Climbing is one of the fine business partners that makes this very radio program possible so that you might be amused and entertained, so that your workday might go by just that little bit faster. 503-228-9278 is how you can find out about those guys. 503-228-9278 or go to cjshighclimbing.com. Speaking of we're trying not to be a show where we talk about the weather and the whatever. So I can't even believe I'm asking this out loud, but as we're talking about this, was it cold where you were yesterday?
Yeah.
God damn. It was one of the first times yesterday I actually had to leave the house to go to the store, and for the first time, I put on my winter coat. It was a thing of having to go back inside because, like, the thin, like, windbreaker thing that I was putting on. You realize just, like, what a weak-ass species human beings really are. For all this talk that we're, like, the overlords of the planet, we're apex predators, it's like I walked outside and said, oh, it's so cold. I better go back inside and put on a dead animal skin of some kind. So I had to go and I had to dig out my wool coat. Because it was like the cold was just like punching me as soon as I walked out. So all the more reason why you don't want to be out there. Just like, even if it's not like roof climbing stuff or things, jobs that are dangerous or slippery or scary or whatever. Just the idea that you're going to have to be out there cleaning your yard and cleaning up all the leaves and all the muck and just the detritus and all of the things that have, grass clippings from like August that you haven't bothered to sweep up. And it's all just sitting there in your lawn, getting ready to be swept down your driveway into your drain where it's going to clog that thing we were talking about yesterday. You don't have to deal with any of this. You just contact CJ's High Climbing Services at cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. They can give you free estimates, and they can also arrange to bill you after the fact, which means you don't have to take time off from work to be there while they're working on it. You don't have to actually, take part of your weekend just sitting there and watching a guy, like, hose something out of the gutter. Because a lot of those businesses, it's like they do it, and they're like, okay, you just pay me now in a fistful of crumpled tens or whatever. Dr. CJ's High Climbing, they will bill you after the fact. They are licensed, they are bonded, they are insured, and they are a proud sponsor of this radio program. 503-228-9278, CJ's High Climbing. This is Don Taylor.
Portland police found a stolen car carrying precious cargo Tuesday afternoon in Portland's Pearl District.
Was it a baby?
Almost.
Oh.
In the backseat of the stolen Honda Civic, they found a 2-year-old Mastiff named Bella. Her owners, Joy Yang and Zach Eyman of West Lynn, reported the car stolen on Saturday afternoon. They searched for Bella for several days, posted flyers, and checked animal shelters. Tuesday's call from the police was a welcome gift. The thieves had dumped the car, with Bella inside, near Northwest 14th and Flanders on Monday. Perhaps because Bella's dark coat closely matches the car's interior, no one noticed her sitting inside. Parking tickets started piling up, and when an officer ran the license plates, he discovered the Honda Civic was stolen and found the dog asleep inside. Portland police called the owners and reunited the West Lynn family. They cared more about finding their pet than they did about getting their car back. They said, "She's like a family member to us. She looks all right. I'm just glad to have this resolved."
I would like to think that if somebody tried to steal something that my dogs were inside, that they would just maim him relentlessly. Now, I know that's probably not the case. That
Max
probably wouldn't
might.
Happen. Max, he would try. The thing is, do you ever do this, here's today's dog talk. Do you ever just have this conversation maybe between you, like you and Patrick, have this talk about like what, because you only have the one dog, you have Bella.
Right.
Do you ever talk about like what, you know, what would she do if she were living in the wild? Not like if you dumped her off or something,
yeah.
But if like she had not, in some parallel world where she was like, you know, living, if she had never been with humans, if she was just living out in the woods, like how she would behave?
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, what do you think, what kind of wild dog would she be?
Well, that I don't really know. I mean, she is a pit bull mix. Pit bull mixed with shepherd. So I'm sure she would handle herself quite well.
Or if she were beamed from your home into some alternate world where she had to survive by herself for like a year.
Yeah. See, now, the thing is now, if she was beamed now, from she wouldn't do so well. Because, you know, she's spoiled rotten and doesn't know how to take care of
herself. And that's it's the non-intuitive thing where, like, Bella seems like a big dog could take care of herself, but then no, because she's been pampered by humans.
Right.
So it is with Max and Philo, where we figure, paradoxically, we think Philo would probably live a long time because he's such a goddamn coward. He would just hide underneath a log, like, and never come out for anything. I mean, he would just go weeks. I mean, you know, without food, without water, without whatever. He would just, like, his fear would keep him. Whereas Max, he would just, like, the first time he saw a mountain lion with something that he wanted, like, he would just charge at it, just thinking, that's mine, it all belongs to me, go, down, stay, you know, and then he would just be eviscerated. He would just be reduced to pulp, like, the first time he tried to take something from a grizzly bear, which he would, like, almost immediately, so... There you go.
I'm reading this really great book right now called The Knife of Never Letting Go. It's the first in the Chaos Walking trilogy. And it's in this world where men can hear each other's thoughts. And they can also hear the thoughts of animals. And the great thing about it is the guy has a dog. But it's a dog. So the dog's thoughts are usually things like, poo, Todd, poo. He's like, shut up, man. Poo, Todd, you know. And then they walk by some sheep, and all the sheep do are just, they go, sheep.
That's hilarious.
Sheep. And he says, yeah, sheep have even less to say than dogs do.
That's fantastic. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk. I just like that sound.
Sandy police said somebody stole a headstone from the Cliffside Cemetery in Sandy.
Why do they do it?
The cemetery is located on 10 Ike Road. The headstone belonged to Ingeborg Thurgefell. Who died in 1925 after battling several diseases that left her mute and deaf.
What's good? She probably couldn't say her own name anyway.
I don't think it was particularly malicious, said Ruth Young, Thurgefell's niece. They didn't know her. They had nothing against us. Detectives said the headstone was stolen sometime between October 3rd and October 19th, which leads Young to believe it was a Halloween prank. Seeing as cemeteries are not places for pictures, there are not many photos taken of the headstone. It read, Ingeborg Thurgefell, 1899 to 1925, beloved daughter.
It was probably somebody who was just touring the cemetery, and they realized that it was going to take them an hour to figure out the name, so they had to take it with them, you know? Also, whoever said that cemeteries aren't places for pictures is dating the wrong girls.
I know.
You're not hooking up with the right people.
I have a whole album at home full of pictures I took at a pet cemetery.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I've got, I don't mean this in a creepy sounding way, but there's the hottest picture of Morgan Grace, who's one of my favorite people musician-wise in Portland, where she just did, for her last record, she just did all of these shots in a cemetery, which is, like, in the wrong hands, just becomes like some ninth grader from drama club has gotten a hold of his grandmother's Instamatic or something. But you know, if those are done really right, there's nothing quite as hot as a chick in a cemetery. There's just no getting around that.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Except for maybe Urgeveld Hinglefling or whatever. Gingleback Zipty Buns. I don't even know what I'm doing there. All right. What?
I don't know. I have something to share with you later, but it's not appropriate now.
Hingleblarg Engelsnink.
Yes.
Okay. Here's your entertainment. I do amuse myself. Here's your entertainment news.
Viewers who can't get enough of the fabulous magical world of Pandora are in luck. James Cameron has signed a deal with 20th Century Fox to direct two more sequels to Avatar, tentatively scheduled to be released in December 2014 and the same month of the following year.
Two more sequels. What does that mean? Does it mean there's already, I mean, like, in addition, was he already optioned?
He already...
Oh, gosh, there's going to be four?
There's going to be at least four.
Hooray.
Yeah.
Well, I can't hate too much, because if that is the money tap that allows him to keep making other things that I actually like, then so be it.
Cameron hasn't released any details of the upcoming scripts, possibly because he has yet to start writing them, but he did promise not to back off the throttle of Avatar's visual and emotional horsepower in a vague statement this week. Once again, he's promised not to back off the throttle of Avatar's visual and emotional horsepower.
It'll be extra helly, Fern Gully.
Sorry.
What?
That was wonderful.
Okay.
Would
you like a moment?
No.
Would this help?
In addition to being the most expensive movie ever made, Avatar is also the highest grossing film of all time, having earned $2.8 billion globally. But because they've already developed the 3D technology needed for the films, studio execs say the Avatar sequels will be significantly cheaper than the original, if you believe that.
I don't understand how the first one could cost so much to make. I mean, even if he's developing new 3D and whatever, it's like CGI, basically. Isn't that the whole thing? Where you can just film Sigourney Weaver for like 10 seconds and then make the whole movie out of that? I don't get why it costs so much to make that movie.
Well,
there's no explanation for that at all.
Movie finances are not...
Like Earth
finances. Like Earth finances.
Yeah, that's true.
To begin with, yeah.
Well, there's that whole thing where like Empire Strikes Back is supposedly still not profitable.
Yeah.
You see goddamn David Prowse bitching about that? I was in the Darth Vader suit, but I don't get any money. They claim it's in the red.
Yes, I drove over to the state of Montana, which George Lucas now owns, to ask him why the movie wasn't profitable yet. Mm. Rover, host of the syndicated Rover's Morning Glory program, hired a witch to place a curse on Miami Heat star LeBron James the morning of the Heat season opener, Tuesday, October 26th. Rover says the curse is payback for the insensitive, pompous way James abandoned the Cleveland Cavaliers. The witch, whose name is Sowen, and assistant witch Lady Magic, used bones,
is that
blood...
that magic with a K?
Of course.
Of course. All right.
Used bones, blood, and James' Miami Heat jersey to place a hex on the star live on the air. Rover asked all Cleveland area listeners of the show, which is based at 100.7.
Are we reading a zany DJ stunt on the air?
We are indeed.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
They asked all the Cleveland area listeners to simultaneously focus their negative energy towards James during the ceremony. A broken leg, hand, or other debilitating injury would be the best outcome, said Rover. At the very least, a sordid sexual misconduct accusation against LeBron would be all right, I suppose. So, yeah.
Okay.
They put a curse on him.
Uh-huh.
Aren't you glad you aren't on FM radio anymore?
Yeah, I really am. I don't know anything about Rover's Morning Madhouse except that he is one of the three guys who replaced Stern. They replaced Stern on the West Coast with Carolla, in New York with David Lee Roth, and in the Midwest with Rover. And I think Rover was the second one to go. They blew out Roth first, followed by Rover, followed by Carolla. So that is the sum total of my knowledge of that guy. Never mind. I don't even care.
Charlie Sheen was briefly hospitalized Tuesday after security at the Plaza Hotel called police to report he was disorderly and had broken furniture in his room. His publicist blamed an allergic reaction to medication. And the actor was discharged Tuesday evening and on his way back to Los Angeles.
I wonder about, like, do agents just have like a magic eight ball? You know, of a sort of like, mix the wrong prescriptions. It was an allergy.
Exhaustion.
You know? That's his daughter, or something. Yeah.
His former wife, actress Denise Richards, says it was a pre-planned publicity trip that they were taking to New York, and Sheen wanted to spend time with her and the children.
This is Richards.
This is Sheen 1.
Sheen 1.
As far as what happened and what went on, I'd rather leave that for Charlie to discuss if that's something he wants to do, because it's very personal and private.
Richards was actually in New York when the incident happened.
I planned for a couple months to do press here and wanted to bring the girls a couple days ahead of time and let them enjoy New York, us enjoy New York, and
the girls
wanted to come along with us.
Oh, the children. All right.
So she's in New York doing publicity for something, and her husband, estranged husband, is there too, and he just happens to have some kind of publicity garnering hissy fit while she's in New York.
Well, don't you figure he's always having a breakdown of some kind? You know, it's like you could have just picked any celebrity and put them in New York and said, and at the same time, Morgan Freeman was in New York. Can you believe Charlie Sheen was having a break? Like, Charlie Sheen's having a break. Probably
no,
not right now.
True.
Like, at this very moment, he's having a... it's hard to believe that him and Martin Sheen are related, you know? Do you wonder if Martin Sheen just looks and just goes, I don't know, I don't get it, you know?
And Emilio Estevez, who...
seems to have his act together, though.
I met him. I used to work at the Renaissance Fair with him. A lovely young man.
Really? At the
yes.
Renaissance Fair?
Yes, indeed.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
A Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey circus performer was injured Sunday afternoon in front of thousands of people during a performance at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. That's an unfortunate name. Witnesses said the circus performer with the Acidulan troupe launched off a teeter board, flew through the air, and instead of landing on top of a human pyramid, hit the ground on his head and
back.
He did not move at all, said a witness. He hit the ground and he was flat, straight. I saw no movement. One of his fellow gymnasts picked him up, carried him running to another man off to the side in black, and he handed him over to him. Witnesses said the three-ring show continued without so much as a pause as the man was taken off stage, but something was noticeably wrong. The next group of performers flubbed up, said the witness. You could tell they were definitely shaken. And then the next performer fell and missed her cue, so you could clearly see they knew something was going on and it was not good.
So is this a great sort of like a chain reaction, where everybody in the entire thing just falls over at some point?
Yes.
And it sounded very much early on like he was handing him over to the Grim Reaper. Like he just went to the wings and there was a man in black and he just handed his fallen comrade over to the man in black who went...
This guy fell down. Take him off.
All right, then.
Yeah, it was a Russian acrobatic troupe. They are known as Pirates of the Teeter Board. And launching each other onto human pyramids is their specialty. But as of Monday evening, Ringling Brothers would not release the injured performer's name or condition. Donna Larkin with Feld Entertainment said, the performer was taken to a local hospital where he's receiving the best possible care, and we expect him to return to our circus family soon.
You know that that's a lie, by the way, because they're Russian acrobats. That's a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
Where is Comrade Nikolai? Comrade Nikolai is recuperating in dacha in countryside. You do not speak. All right. You were listening to the entertainment portion here of Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Brought to you in part by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com. That is their website, squireselectric.com, 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. So whether it is, and by the way, we talk about electrical wiring and Ethernet wiring. It's also that it's that time of year, just as we were mentioning earlier with the sort of the gutter cleaning and the, you know, the leaves and the rain and the whatever, where it's like, you just are running more power out of one outlet or one room than at any other time during the year. Even more than the air conditioner, I think, because in the summertime, you're not at home a lot or you just got the windows open. But it's like the wintertime, you just enter that long, cold stretch where you just, everybody is staying at home all the time. And everybody has just got something plugged in. It's like a laptop, or they've got the television, and then they got the sometimes a little space heaters going
and
on.
And then you plug in your Christmas lights in like one outlet, like right by the front door.
Seriously. And it's the space heater too. And I go back to that because I had that because my furnace wasn't working. And boy, thank God that I got that thing repaired before the cold snap set in like earlier this week. I can't even imagine how long it would have been. But you know, the space, I don't even want to know what my electrical bill is going to be because those things just suck power out of the wall.
Yeah. You ever have that thing, the kind that has the thermostat on it?
Yeah.
And so it kicks back in and it starts heating up and all the lights in your house dim and you just go, wow, that's costing me like $50 right there.
You're just picturing a brownout across New Brunswick. So I'm not saying – this is not one of those things where I'm not trying to make everybody all afeard that something is going to go wonky with your electrical system.
Oh, sure you are.
I'm not. I'm just saying these things do happen every now and again. And if you have any concerns, any doubts about the electrical wiring in your house, especially as you get into, you know, Christmas – Because look, Christmas is no time to... It's not a good... You don't decorate the tree with fire, kids. You just don't. It's a bad idea.
They used to.
Even inadvertently. But I'm saying we've moved on. So you don't want to, you don't want to do that. You don't string the tree with ham. You don't decorate the branches with flames. So if you have any doubts, any, curiosity about the state of your electrical system, or maybe you just moved into a new house... You moved in, it's your first winter there. You want to make sure that everything is sort of up to snuff, up to code, that it's going to be able to take the electrical strain you put on it during the winter. Do yourself a favor. You call Squires Electric, 503-252-1609, or go to squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, insured electrical contractors and good folk at that. Squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Here is Don Taylor.
Two $500 million Hobbit movies will be made in New Zealand as originally planned, Prime Minister John Key said Wednesday, after 2 days of crisis talks with Hollywood studio executives. Senior executives from Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema won an agreement for a change in labor law and bigger tax breaks to keep the project in New Zealand after a dispute over pay and conditions for actors threw the production into turmoil last week. The studios had warned that unless the threat of labor action was removed, production of the two movies would be moved to another country. The dispute became a national issue in New Zealand, which received a huge boost to tourism and filmmaking industries after the Lord of the Rings trilogy was made there. Hundreds of people marched in several cities Monday to show their support for keeping production in New Zealand.
Hey, is the dragon's name pronounced Smaug or Smog?
You're asking me this?
You're not like a Tolkien freak, but you're familiar with The Hobbit.
I've seen the movies. I am not.
Have you never seen? You've never seen the? Have you not even seen the animated Hobbit, the Rankin Bass Hobbit?
No.
Pile the dishes, stack the plates. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates.
No.
Never mind.
I tried to read The Hobbit once, and I really didn't like it. And my first husband told me that the actual grown-up trilogy was better. So then I tried to read that, and I didn't like it either. And then my husband tried to get me to read Lord of the Rings, and I still didn't like it.
And that's a lie, by the way, when somebody says that the grown-up Lord of the Rings is better. They're the same thing.
I don't know. He believed that The Hobbit was more for children.
It's for children, of course.
I don't know. But anyway, I loved the movies.
All right, well, fair enough.
Didn't really like the... never read the book.
Well, Bilbo fights this dragon named... and I believe I've always pronounced it Smaug because it seemed like kind of a sinister-sounding name. It's S-M-A-U-G. But I realize now that I don't think I've ever actually heard it spoken aloud, except by Rankin Bass, who are not like professional linguists or anything. So, all right, well, doesn't matter.
No one has popped up in the text box yet.
Probably.
Tell you about
this. I'll find out. All right, here's Don Taylor.
That's all the entertainment news.
All right, there's your entertainment news. Now all the messages are about things from. They're all about people's last words if they were going to be executed.
Oh.
Including many, many people saying, my last words would be, Rick Emerson did it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This guy, I would yell Baba Booey. Thanks. Let's see. Da-da-da-da. A lot of people talking about levers being pulled. This is why the guy's losing the election. He thinks there's a lever. Let's see. At last it's revealed, says this text message, which has no context. Inside the Emerson chest beats the heart of a supervillain. Don, don't let him make you the mirage to his syndrome. Fight the supervillain. All right. So there you go. There's no actual observations about Smog or Smaug, whatever the hell his name is. You were listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up later on the day. Geek Watch on the way. Corpse Watch on the way. Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, who's going to talk about Fright Town. So I guess Willamette sent, one of their employees... One of the Willamette's writers has been doubling as an employee there to get sort of a bird's eye view, an insider's view of what it's like to work at a haunted house. So Aaron's going to talk about that. So Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We'll also have Pop Culture Authority, which is a follow-up to yesterday. So yesterday's Pop Culture Authority was about the movie Psycho and the question of was there real violence ever seen during the movie Psycho. During the opening moments of yesterday's Rick Emerson show, a guy called us, I swear to Christ, from London, and said, hey, why is Ric Flair called Nature Boy? And so we were endeavoring to find out the definitive answer for that. So we're going to have that today. So that's Pop Culture Authority. That's all coming up. The Rick Emerson show at rickemerson.com. Once this program has wrapped, we have a brief musical interlude, and then over at rickemerson.com, The Rick Emerson Show, to which you can listen for just 32 cents a day. Don't forget, every day's Rick Emerson Show this week is followed by an episode of AZ, which is the ongoing zombie-based radio drama based here in Portland, Oregon, that aired a couple years ago originally, created by Aaron Duran and Jason Crump. And there's going to be a marathon of that on Sunday as well. This is all true. Legion of News brought to you by The Cleaning Solution, among other fine folk. If you want to do some cleaning around your house, Perhaps some scrubbing, but you don't actually want to do it yourself. I'm trying to think of a lot of dropped G's that I can do there. Emulsifying? Nah, something else altogether. It doesn't matter.
Cleansing?
Cleansing? That has negative connotations, I would think, in this modern world, though. In any event, the cleaning...
De-spoodifying?
Sure. De what?
De-spoodifying?
What is spood?
Spoody. Okay, maybe that's just something I picked up from watching Two Angry Beavers.
Maybe. Please to explain.
They'll just say that something is spooty. Get that all.
No.
Don't put your spooty hands on me.
No.
Get your spooty thing off the floor. I dropped the spooty. Yeah.
No, I feel like there's a linguistic chasm that's opened between us just now. I don't even know who you are anymore. All right. Well, the beavering notwithstanding, the cleaning solution can be reached at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. So whether it is, we talked about tile, actually, and somebody asked if they can actually clean, because, you know, you put the caulking or the grout or the whatever between the tile, but then, as you know, over the course of the house, the things shift and move and it contracts and expands with the weather, and you get the cracks in the grout, and that's just the most unpleasant thing, because you said there's the only thing you can clean that with is a toothbrush, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you're not even really cleaning it, you're just sort of shoving it down inside, and then it grows back out, but now it's developed, you know, like a root system or something.
You know what that is? Spoody.
Spood. That's exactly what that is. Don't let the spood get the upper hand.
You want someone to want the guy to come in and clean your spoody growl.
You know, the spood. They control the weather while the mollusks control the international banking system, Don. And people, you know, the mainstream media won't report that, but it's true. You can contact Mr. Michael Beatty at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Let's do one more here, and we will wrap up today's installment of Legion of News.
A Colorado Springs Basset Hound is recovering after eating 31 rusty roofing nails, her rabies tag, and rock-like siding from the house. Carla Bork said the saga began on October 17th when her one-year-old Basset Hound named Sophie wasn't feeling well. We noticed one evening that she started throwing up, she said. She wouldn't lie down, and that's pretty out of character for her. She said she had a funny feeling that something wasn't right. Bork took Sophie to the emergency vet to be checked out. They thought it was an upset stomach, but they said, let's do some x-rays for giggles. When the x-rays came out, it wasn't giggles. There were nails and other objects in her stomach. She said one of the nails had moved into her dog's intestines. The nails were old, rusted, sharp, jagged, and rough, and didn't look like it would feel very good to have them go down your throat, she said. The vet performed emergency surgery and removed 31 old roofing nails, the rabies tag, and siding from the house.
You know, even in the dog world, there's the equivalent of that kid who just sits at home eating marbles, you know?
Yeah, that would be this Basset Hound.
You know, Robbie, what have you got in your mouth? A big bag of thumbtacks? All right. Oh, there you go. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. Here at Cascadia.fm, you can get this program via iTunes later on today, and as well as an MP3 download right here at legionofnews.com or Cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show begins in just a few minutes over at rickemerson.com if you'd like to hear more of our merriment and wry brand of amusement. Don Taylor at the news desk, advanced technology brought to you by Mr. Thomas Gill, and of course, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kinnikoa. Thank you for listening. Legion of News returns tomorrow at noon right here at Cascadia.fm. Until then, have a pleasant day, won't you?
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.